Chapter 5. The dawn was creeping out of the east as a low, dark line began to rise above the horizon. Through the windows of the helicopter, the black blur took on a symmetrical cone-shaped feature and soon became a mountain peak surrounded by the sea. There was a three-quarter moon behind it. The light altered from ivory to indigo blue and then to an orange radiance as the sun rose, and the slopes could be seen mantled in snow. Pitt glanced over at Giordino. He was asleep, a state he could slip in and out of like an old sweater. He had slept from the time they left Anchorage. 5 minutes after transferring to the helicopter, he promptly drifted off again. Pitt turned to Mendoza. She sat perched behind the pilot. The look on her face was that of a little girl eager to see a parade. Her gaze was fixed on the mountain. In the early light, it seemed to Pitt her face had softened. Her expression was not so businesslike, and the lines of her mouth held a tenderness that was not there before. "Augustine Volcano," she said, unaware that Pitt's attention was focused on her and not out the window. "Named by Captain Cook in 1778. You wouldn't know to look at it, but Augustine is the most active volcano in Alaska, having erupted 6 times in the last century." Pitt regretfully turned away and stared below. The island seemed devoid of any human habitation. Long, swirling flows of lava rock spilled down the mountain's sides until they met the sea. A small cloud drifted above the summit. "Very picturesque," he said, yawning. "Might have possibilities as a ski resort." "Don't bet on it," she laughed. "That cloud you see over the peak is steam. Augustine is a constant performer. The last eruption in 1987 surpassed Mount St. Helens in Washington. The fall of ash and pumice was measured as far away as Athens." Pitt had to ask, "What's its status now?" "Recent data confirm the heat around the summit is increasing, probably forecasting an impending explosion." "Naturally, you can't say when." "Naturally." She shrugged. "Volcanoes are unpredictable. Sometimes they become violent without the slightest warning. Sometimes they take months to build up to a spectacular climax that never happens. They sputter, rumble a little, and then go dormant. Those Earth scientists I told you about who died from the nerve agent, they were on the island to study the impending activity."
"Where are we settling down?"
"About 10 miles off the shore," she replied, "on the Coast Guard cutter Catawba."
"The Catawba," he repeated, as if reminiscing.
"Yes, you know of her?"
"Set a copter on her flight pad myself a few years ago."
"Where was that?"
"North Atlantic, near Iceland."
He was gazing beyond the island now. He sighed and massaged his temples. "A good friend and I were hunting for a ship embedded in an iceberg."
"Did you find it?"
He nodded.
"A burned-out hulk. Barely beat the Russians to it. Later we crashed in the surf on the Icelandic coast. My friend was killed."
She could see his mind was reliving the events. The expression on his face took on a faraway sadness. She changed the subject. "We'll have to say goodbye. Temporarily, I mean, when we land." He shook off the past and stared at her.
"You're leaving us?"
"You and Al will be staying on the Catawba to search for the nerve agent's location. I'm going to the island where the local response team has set up a database.
And part of my job is to send water samples from the ship to your lab?"
"Yes, by measuring trace levels of the contamination, we can direct you toward the source."
"Like following breadcrumbs?"
"That's one way of putting it."
"After we find it, what then?"
"Once your salvage team brings up the drums containing the nerve agent, the Army will dispose of it by deep well injection on an island near the Arctic Circle."
"How deep is the well?"
4,000 feet.
"All neat and tidy."
The open-for-business look returned to her eyes. "It happens to be the most efficient method open to us."
"You're optimistic."
She looked at him questioningly.
"What do you mean?"
"The salvage, it could take months." "We can't even afford weeks," she came back almost vehemently.
"You're treading in my territory now," Pitt said, as if lecturing. "Divers can't risk working in water where one drop on their skin will kill them. The only reasonably safe way is to use submersibles, a damned slow and tedious process. And submersibles require highly trained crews with specially constructed vessels as work platforms."
"I've already explained," she said impatiently. "Presidential authority gives us carte blanche on any equipment we need."
"That's the easy part," Pitt continued. Despite your water sample directions, finding a shipwreck is like looking for a coin in the middle of a football field in the dark with a candle. Then, if we get lucky and make contact, we may find the hull broken in sections and the cargo scattered, or the drums too corroded to move. Murphy's Law can hit us from every angle. No deep-sea recovery operation is ever cut and dried. Mendoza's face reddened. I'd like to point out... Don't bother, Pitt cut her off. I'm the wrong guy for a gung-ho speech. I've heard them all before. You won't get a chorus of the Notre Dame fight song from me. And save your breath for the countless lives hang in the balance routine. I'm aware of it. I don't have to be reminded every 5 minutes. She looked at him, annoyed with him for his arrogant charm, feeling that he was testing her somehow. Have you ever seen someone who came in contact with Nerve Agent S? No. It's not a pretty sight. They literally drown in their own blood as their internal membranes burst. Every body orifice bleeds like a river. Then the corpse turns black. You're very descriptive. It's all a game to you, she lashed out. It's not a game to me. He didn't reply. He simply nodded downward at the Catawba looming through the pilot's windshield. We're landing. The pilot noted that the ship had turned bow on to the wind from the fluttered ensign on the halyards. He eased the helicopter over the stern, hovered a few moments, and sat down on the pad. The rotor blades had hardly swung to a stop when two figures dressed from head to toe in astronaut-looking suits approached while unfolding a circular plastic tube about 5 feet in diameter that looked like a huge umbilical cord. They secured it around the exit door and gave 3 knocks. Pitt undid the latches and swung the door inward. The men outside passed him cloth hoods with see-through lenses and gloves. Best put them on, commanded a muffled voice. Pitt prodded Giordino awake and handed him a hood and a pair of gloves. What in hell are these? Giordino mumbled, emerging from the cobwebs. Welcome gifts from the sanitation department. 2 more crewmen appeared in the plastic tunnel and took their gear. Giordino, still half asleep, stumbled from the helicopter. Pitt hesitated and stared into Mendoza's eyes. What's my reward if I find your poison in 48 hours? What do you want it to be? Are you as hard as you pretend? Harder, Mr. Pitt, much harder. Then you decide. He gave her a rakish smile and was gone.